Joining me are University of Cincinnati Professor of Health Promotion and Director of Research and Evaluation, Keith King, Youth Behavioral Health Associate Director at Talbert House, Darcy Lichnarowitz, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Health Promotion and Education, Rebecca Vitterick. If you again have a question, 513-419-7100. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start out explaining a study, and Keith, maybe you can start here, that UC has just done recently in terms of kids and teens. I guess it was 7th grade through 12th grade prescription drug abuse. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Correct. We collaborated with the Coalition for a Drug-Free Greater Cincinnati. The Coalition for a Drug-Free Greater Cincinnati went ahead and collected the data. And then after collecting the data, gave us the data, then we went ahead and analyzed that data. That was surveys given out to 7th through 12th grade students in over 133 schools through 8 different counties of Greater Cincinnati, about 54,000 plus students, looking at the protective factors, risk factors, different types of variables associated with kids' involvement in prescription drugs, really trying to figure out what percent of youth are involved in prescription drug abuse, why they're using, when they're using, where they're getting it, all those main questions. And some of the main results that we found, just to kind of cut to the chase, we found that about 14% of youth in the study throughout Greater Cincinnati reported that they had used prescription drugs, meaning that they had abused prescription drugs, which they were using non-medical prescription drugs without the prescription from a doctor, most often going ahead and using them, misusing them, and using them to try to get high or numb themselves from pain and different problems and so forth. And so with that, we also found some significant differences based on gender, based on race, ethnicity, and pretty much it held true, though, with junior high school and high school. We did find that, you know, of boys and girls, boys were significantly more likely than girls to go ahead and use. With respect to the race and ethnicities, interestingly enough, Hispanic youth were more likely than African-American youth and white youth to go ahead and report that they had used prescription drugs. And then the junior high school students and high school students both reported high rates of use. The junior high school students, really, when you get into some of the protective factors, which we're going to talk about in a minute, some of those protective factors just alarming with respect to the younger kids, and now they're getting involved at much, much, much younger ages than ever before. So it is a major problem that we need to address.
I'd like to ask a question about all of that, but even before I get to that, why did you decide this study was needed? Was there just a lot of indication out there that kids of this age were abusing prescription drugs?
In working with the Coalition for Drug-Free Greater Cincy does great work, and they collaborate with a variety of different local coalitions throughout Cincinnati, trying to go ahead and prevent substance use and underage drinking among youth. What we found was that in this area, some of the major problems with respect to substances, the main problems, really you're looking at alcohol, which has always been a problem, marijuana use, and now prescription drugs has completely spiked up. We've seen heroin obviously increase as well, but those three, prescription drugs, have absolutely increased. And now, as my two colleagues here will go ahead and talk, there are so many teenagers and middle school students, as well as parents and adults, that do not really think that prescription drugs are drugs and that they're a problem. And so there's a lot of downplay with that. And really takes me back to all the days when the middle school students started to go ahead and misuse inhalants and inhalant abuse. Now you see prescription drugs on the rise in this area.
Darcy, what do you find at Talbert House?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're seeing walking in the door, too. We have a lot of kids who are misusing drugs like Adderall, Valium, Xanax, all those prescription drugs that maybe their parents are getting from a doctor, they're seeing their friends take. And if a doctor prescribes it, it's safe, right? But that's a huge misconception. There's a huge risk. Doctors are doctors for a reason. It's not safe to just take anything that someone hands you. And we're seeing this on a daily basis with youth walking into our office for services.
Rebecca?
Unfortunately, we actually see that parents perceive these drugs to be mm-hmm. much safer than a street drug like cocaine or heroin. So it's not only the kids that are perceiving them as safer, but the parents as well. So part of our research was to look to see what parents were doing, if they're actually talking to the kids about prescription drugs.
And so what did, keep going back to the study, what did you find it was more boys, you said, than girls. Why do you think that is? I mean, is that standard for drug use, or is that just in this case?
Well, it's interesting when you start to get really into it. Why are kids using drugs in the first place? That's the question that has to be addressed. And with boys, boys are significantly more likely to go ahead and abuse prescription drugs to get high than girls. There are a lot of girls that are still abusing it to get high, but they're more likely to, let's say for Adderall, like for instance Adderall, they're more likely to go ahead and use Adderall to stay alert or to go ahead and lose weight than boys are. So there are some differences there. But it's interesting. We really wanted to look at not specifically the differences between boys and girls and races and so forth, but what are ways that we can go ahead and prevent them from using in the first place? And what we did find in that were that, you know, some of the biggest protective factors that you have, getting kids involved in pro-social activities like school activities, school sports, extracurricular activities, community organizations, getting them heavily involved with their family, Rebecca said, having their parents talk to them. Those are protective factors that protect and prevent kids from getting involved in all substances, including prescription drugs. And it's interesting, even having the parents talk about the dangers of alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, and not even talking just about prescription drugs, but talking about just the dangers of drugs in general, that significantly decreases their likelihood to get involved in any drug use across the board.
All right, so do you find it at Talbert House that do you bring parents in to work with the patients as well when you have them in, or the, I don't know if you call them patients.
Clients, consumers, patients, sure. We do. We absolutely encourage parents to be involved in every portion of their youth's treatment, whether it's for mental health services, whether it's for drug and alcohol. They are such a key component in their child participating. First of all, they've got to get them there, but they are with the child much, much more time during the day than a treatment provider is. So they are really kind of the major factor in carrying out those things in the home and in the community. So we strongly encourage families to take part in their treatment. And if you ever see somebody, you know, if you ever see a provider who doesn't encourage that, you know, that's something you need to question, because families are vital in that. Best practices indicate that the more support you can have from the community, the more likely you are to be able to move into recovery and to have success.
How much education goes on in the schools? Rebecca, do you see more of that?
There is education overall on drug use. The problem is our schools are leaving out prescription drugs. They're not including them with education on alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. So we definitely need more efforts in our school focusing specifically on prescription drugs and making sure they are incorporated into our prevention programs.
513-419-7100 if you have a question. Jay is calling from Northside, and you had the opportunity to get some information yourself. Tell us about that, Jay.
Well, that's right. I was a little kid during the 1960s, a teenager during the 1970s, and I was fortunate enough to have attended an assembly when I was like in third grade that gave us some objective information about the effects of various drugs, what they did, get the effects of intoxication and some of the side effects. And so I was always curious about drugs. And so when I started experimenting, I had some kind of background to understand what different drugs did, what their effects were. I was able to understand what was working for me, what wasn't working for me. I determined that I had an addictive personality, and so I stayed away from things that were more addicting. I saw friends who were doing things like mixing red wine and Seconal and getting on a motorcycle and, you know, just bad ideas. And so the thing that I'd like to put out there, it's not a panacea. It's not going to work for everybody, but to have comprehensive and objective information about drugs available for young kids, you know, once you get into, you know, 11, 12 years old, maybe they're already experimenting, maybe they're already frying their brains with airplane glue or paint, you know, just bad ideas.
Jay, you bring up a really good point that I wanted to ask, which I find a little bit interesting, is that you sort of use this drug information as a guide to choose what to experiment with. I mean, Keith, do you find that, Keith? Or is it I don't know. How many kids automatically are going to try something?
Well, there's a danger in just throwing out education there's a danger in educating versus just throwing out information. And there's a difference in that. And so, you know, quality education is going to go ahead and really examine not just the specific effects of the drug, but why do people use drugs in the first place? And one of the things that has to be looked at oftentimes is neglected in the schools and in the communities and in the homes and so forth is why do people use drugs? And when you look at the specific psychological needs behind it, there are some basic psychological needs that all people have. These are from kids all the way to adults. We have the need for connectedness. We have the need for power. We have the need for freedom. And we have the need for fun. If you don't feel positively connected to other individuals, you're going to do something to try to go ahead and ameliorate that situation. So you either can go ahead and use drugs and numb yourself. You can go ahead and get angry and get violent about that. You can feel hopeless and helpless and get depressed and suicidal. You can go ahead and prove that you are connected by engaging in promiscuous sexual behaviors and so on and so forth. But the bottom line is connection. So when you start to look at what are ways to try to problem solve the issue, it's not necessarily the drug specific, it's the underlying issue, which is in our minds, and this is what has been shown through the National Longitudinal Study on Adolescent Health and our other research, consistently, the number one factor to prevent kids from getting involved in drug use overall is getting them positively connected to their family, to the school, and to the community.
Jay, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking about teens abusing and becoming addicted to prescription drugs. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll continue our discussion after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Coming up, we'll be checking in on the Reds at this All-Star break. First, we continue our discussion about the abuse of prescription drugs. Joining me are University of Cincinnati Professor of Health Promotion and Director of Research and Evaluation, Keith King, Youth Behavioral Health Associate Director at Talbert House, Darcy Lichnerowitz, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Health Promotion and Education, Rebecca Vitterick. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Marilee's calling from Marymount. Hello, Marilee.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
Good. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I'm afraid that I believe that the epidemic, a lot of it stems back to the psychiatrists who are over-medicating these kids. I feel like it's too readily prescribed, and it's much easier to prescribe Adderall or Concerta or Focalin than just to look at a child's diet and behavioral issues.
Comments, Keith?
Well, one of the things that is definitely true, and we saw Ritalin being prescribed early on, and we saw attention deficit hyperactivity disorder being overly diagnosed. For instance, in the U.S., you're looking at about 5% of school children being diagnosed with ADHD compared to England, which has about 0.5%. So there is a significant difference. I don't really know if there's that big of a difference between American kids and English kids. I really don't know about that. But we do know that there is an overprescription of that type of medication with Ritalin and Adderall. That is true. And that may have an impact overall on some of the substance abuse types of issues that are out there on the streets.
Do you find that the way she's talking, the overprescribing, is it that these kids are, there are too many people taking it in that regard where it's overprescribed? Or is your study more concerned with the students or teens who are not prescribed these drugs taking the drugs?
Yeah, that's what we were looking at. We looked at, I mean, if we go into the schools and we've talked with the kids, and just as Darcy has consistently talked and talked and talked with the youth today, when you start talking with them, they'll go to parties. It used to be back in the day, remember, Marianne, back in the day, it was just alcohol and maybe another drug or two. That was it. Now you have pill popping parties and they're trading pills. You even have cases these days of elementary students and middle school students who are literally being mugged for their Ritalin and for their Adderall, and then the kids will go ahead and use that and snort it much like cocaine because of the stimulant properties. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the abuse and individuals taking that medication or sharing meds with their friends to go ahead and abuse it, most often to get high or to go ahead and numb themselves from their problems.
Marilee, anything else? All right.
No, that about covers it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilee. Darcy, what are you seeing? Are the people that come into Talbert House people that have already prescribed these drugs, or are they getting them off the streets from other sources?
You know, it can be both ways. There are times where people come in and they've been started on a legitimate prescription, and then it gets out of hand after a certain amount of time, and then they do become dependent on that medication. So that is certainly one way they can access it. For a lot of the kids that we see, though, it really is they get it wherever they can get it. And you may have seen the PSAs on kids who get it from their grandma's medicine cabinet. You know, it's not just necessarily a drug dealer down the street. They're getting it from their friends. They're getting it at parties. They're getting it from relatives. They are sneaking it. So it comes from so many different places.
Rebecca?
Yes, we see in our research that the number one place where students get prescription drugs is from their friends, and it usually is for free. Sometimes they'll sell them, but often it's just from their friends. They're just sharing or trading drugs. We also see that family medicine cabinet is one of the top locations. So they're not getting them from a doctor in our research and in what we see.
Should parents be locking the medicine cabinet just as they do the alcohol cabinet?
I think parents need to have an open conversation with their kids about that medicine cabinet and what's in it and how to use these drugs properly and what they're really there for, rather than actually locking up the meds. I think it'd be much more important for parents to just continue that conversation.
I think also with it, it would be well suited for all parents, all adults, to go ahead and do an inventory of their actual medicine cabinet right now and see how many meds are actually in your cabinet right now that are expired or you don't need anymore. And if you don't need them, they should be disposed of. So the meds, a lot of individuals will keep them in the medicine cabinet thinking, well, maybe I'll need this down the road or something like that. And if there are children in the house, that actually does send a message to them saying, you know what, well, maybe I can use this later on. Or if grandma has this medication and it worked for her, then I can go ahead and try to take it as well. You know, my grandmother had her knee worked on and now she has Vicodin, so I'm going to try that as well. And those messages have to be conveyed, just like I said.
How early do you start talking to kids about this? You were talking about elementary kids getting mugged, so they may be aware of it. It's happening. How early should you start talking to kids about this?
I think really it depends on your child's age, obviously. You have to be responsible to know what they're able to handle. But the sooner you start having conversations with them, using language that is going to be understandable for them and giving them scenarios that are going to be understandable for them, the better.
Give me an example. What would you say?
Well, let's say I had a preteen. I might sit down with them and say, you know, you have some friends who are great kids. We love your friends. Let's talk about what might happen, you know, and put a hypothetical out there for them. What might happen if you're confronted with, you know, one of your friends come over and says, hey, I've got this. Do you want to try it? How are you going to handle that? And give them scenarios that they can actually practice with you so that they've got those kind of scripts built into their heads from the time that they're young enough to really start having those conversations with their friends. We're seeing it. I think the youngest client I've seen who came in with a drug and alcohol diagnosis was about 8.5 years old. So you've got to know your kid, and you've got to be really thinking, you know, when my child goes to school, it's different from when I went, and you have to be responding to that when it's time.
We did get an email, and again, if you have a question, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org. Talking about the DARE education program, they say it's being cut in some communities due to police department budget cuts. This person thinks it's short-sighted. Has that program been successful? Do you guys have any research on that?
The research on the DARE program, I mean, it's been out there. It's very controversial and it's widely varied. It largely depends upon, you know, it was put in place to go ahead and try to establish positive connections with law enforcement and the kids. That is a good thing. That's what we do need. We need our students and our youth to go ahead and respect authority figures and respect the law. And we need law enforcement officials to go ahead and assist the kids. And they are. There's some great, great, great guys and females out there that are doing this. However, there are some programs that are in place, DARE programs, that just flat out would use some of the scare tactics that don't work. There are some that'll use one-shot deals that aren't going to work, but there are some that do work. And so really to say it does or does not work isn't the issue. The issue is you need a comprehensive drug prevention program that really addresses some of the underlying issues associated with youth drug use. And those underlying issues are some of the things that we mentioned, like whether kids feel connected positively to their peers, to their family, and to the community.
Got an email from Greg who says, I'd like you to address the availability of beds for people seeking detox from opiates and addiction.
Wow, yeah, that is a huge challenge, isn't it?
Why is that a huge challenge?
Because they're very costly and they're very hard to come by. There are very few facilities that provide detox at this point in time. So physicians and behavioral health agencies are having to find alternatives to address those issues. And so that is a huge challenge for people who are looking to really detox in a medical center.
And that's just going cold turkey, or just finding your way down slowly from the addiction?
Yeah, with medical monitoring.
513-419-7100 if you have a question, as we're talking about prescription drug use among teenagers. You've talked a lot about the involvement with family and parents. What about other kids? What if you are a teen and you notice that your friends are doing this sort of thing, even if you are not doing that? What should you do?
I would encourage that teen to step up and talk to an adult that they feel close to and they trust, whether it would be a teacher at school or a parent, but definitely bring adult into the conversation and kind of tell them about what's going on and what your friends are doing, and they can help create an action plan for you.
And the research is very clear, just for parents and adults, that whole notion, birds of a feather flock together, there's research and that's valid, that's true. And so if your kid has friends that are using alcohol, marijuana, tobacco, prescription drugs, your child is significantly more likely to be using as well. And so you have to kind of be monitoring, setting limits, and enforcing limits with your child as much as possible.
How regularly, you talk about sitting down and having these hypothetical conversations, how often do you need to do that? It seems to me that one time is probably not enough. You need to keep reinforcing. Mm-hmm.
I encourage parents to look for teachable moments. So whether you're watching a sitcom in the evening, something would come up, just use those teachable moments to actually open those conversations. The more the better, though. If you can have conversations on a weekly basis about these topics, it's really going to benefit your child in the long run.
You're all talking about how prevention is so important and perhaps even better than treatment. But what if it's gotten past that? What signs should parents look for that their child might be abusing prescription drugs?
There are multiple warning signs. One of the critical things to look for is changes in behavior. So whether it be skipping school or changes in school performance, hanging out with new friends, actually withdrawing from current friends or family. There might be things like changes in personality. These are warning signs to look for. And then again, if you do suspect, it's a good idea to have a conversation with your child and just open that door to see if they are having a problem with prescription drugs.
Any other suggestions?
I think some of the warning signs actually do mimic other problems as well. So you do see, for instance, a lot of kids that are abusing drugs and abusing substances who are definitely depressed. They would show signs of helplessness and hopelessness. They might go ahead and stop getting involved in once pleasurable activities. And those types of warning signs also run all the way into suicidal thinking and then suicidal behaviors and self-destructive types of behaviors, which obviously are huge. And so the idea is, you know, this is an issue. Now, with those warning signs, oftentimes those are detected by peers and friends. So the friends need to be taught, these are the warning signs to look for. And when you see these warning signs, this is what you should do. Tell an adult, make a referral. The adult then makes the referral to perhaps like Darcy's agency, and then they get the help that they need.
Absolutely. And if you find a good provider who can treat both the behavioral health, so for example, your depression and the drug and alcohol use or the prescription drug use, that's great because so often these things go hand in hand.
When kids are starting to think about this and start to use this, you mentioned reasons with girls for weight loss and everything, and some of them, is it to stay awake, to study? I mean, sometimes I think we all have the stereotype of the typical druggie who just likes being high all the time. It sounds like they're taking them for reasons other than just being high. Is that the case?
There's a variety of different reasons that they use them. They really do. And so some of them may be for increased alertness. Some may be for weight loss. Some might be going ahead and trying to deal with their problems or cope or numb. And so you have a variety of different stories. And the only way that you get the story from the child as to why exactly they're using is to ask them. So you have to go ahead and start talking to them. Now, you talked about, you know, when exactly should you start talking to the child about drugs. The talk starts way before drugs. The talk starts way earlier. I mean, it's like talking about, listen, what's healthy to put into your body? what is unhealthy to put into your body at a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, so that at that point they know what's healthy and what's unhealthy. And this is a pill that your doctor gave you, but it's okay to take because the doctor gave you it. You can't take it just on your own. You need to have this prescribed for you, and that this is why. And you can clearly explain that to them in their terms, 4-year-old, 5-year-old terms.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Sandy's calling from Mount Carmel. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
What's your comment or your question?
My comment, question, thought is my son is a 28-year-old heroin addict, and we've been fighting this battle now for 9 years. It is my biggest thought is that it's actually a matter of self-esteem, and that's really hard to tell about kids. My son, who's a heroin addict, was popular, wonderful, perfect. I thought everything was great with him, and he'd been a perfect kid, no trouble, and it takes not many times using Oxy and then starting on the heroin, and he's left with this for the rest of his life. I've had him arrested 3 times, twice by calling Simon Leith and having wonderful Deputy Sean Donovan help me out and have my son arrested twice. By the grace of God, now he's going to the methadone clinic. And if he has to have methadone for the rest of his life, that is perfect with me. My as a mom, I think what you really need to do is get your kids before they're 18. Talking is great. We talked. All my kids went through DARE and Just Say No and the whole nine yards. None of that, it just, I don't think I need to start speaking in schools and see if I can tell kids. Kids don't understand, mm-hmm. and I tried drugs when I was a kid. I used LSD. I used all kinds of stuff when I was a kid. The one thing I was afraid of was a needle and the heroin.
Mm-hmm. So, and your son apparently was. Now, Sandy, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Jerry, you have a question?
Yeah. Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, Jerry. You're from Northside. Go ahead. Tell us what your question is.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. In my experience, I find that there's a line between, a socioeconomic line between illicit drugs and prescription drugs. I was wondering if there's any studies on that and in reference to in the suburban areas. I feel that the children and adolescents are more prone to abuse prescription drugs opposed to the urban areas where I believe it's more of a illicit drug use.
Keith?
Well, when one of the variables that we looked at, we didn't necessarily look at SES level. However, we did look at employment status. And it is interesting, this cuts across all the drugs, though. So, for instance, when you look at employment status, and you would expect that those kids that are employed part-time or full-time would have higher SES levels than those that are not employed. Those that are employed actually are significantly more likely to be abusing prescription drugs, alcohol, marijuana, tobacco, cocaine, you name it, straight across the board. And some of the rationale behind that is because they have disposable income and they can go ahead and use it, as well as they are exposed to different types of arenas and different individuals. And so that might open the door to that. Now, the moral is not to go ahead and make the kids not to stop working or anything like that. That's not the moral at all. But it is something that individuals have to be aware of. When you start looking at SES levels, though, this cuts across the board. This problem really does cut across the board. Prescription drugs aren't necessarily just relegated to those that are out in suburbia and not into the inner cities. That's not true. And so it's across the board with lower, middle, as well as upper class youth.
Thanks so much for your call, Jerry. Katie is calling in from Northern Kentucky. Katie, what's your comment?
I just wanted to point out a couple of things that really impacted me when I was a high school student as far as avoiding drug use. We did have a DARE program at our school, and I guess most of this was in middle school, I'd like to say, rather than in high school. But we had one teacher, specifically a gym teacher, who would actually stop gym class one day a week, and he, I know we talked a little bit about scare tactics earlier, but he would show videos, and some of these videos were really, really well done, and they really showed the impact of one child within a household having a drug addiction or using drugs and what that impact was on the parents and the whole family. And in some of those videos, there were really dramatic scenes, like maybe that person would die or maybe it would cause all this other strife within the family. But, you know, 15 years later, looking back and having discussions with all my former classmates, we all agreed that those videos were so impactful because it wasn't scary like, oh, you might die if you do drugs. It was scary like, this can affect everyone you know. And that type of a scare tactic we all, in hindsight, found really effective. The other thing that was really effective for me was that at some point, I think I had a group of friends that my mom was concerned about, and she went as far as to totally violate my teenage privacy and contact the principal at the school and say, look, my kid's hanging out with these students. Can you give me any insight as to whether or not she needs to steer clear of these people?
Katie, thank you.
She was told yes.
Katie, thank you so much. We're out of time, but I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining me. Time's gone quickly today. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Professor of Health Promotion and Director of Research and Evaluation, Keith King, Youth Behavioral Health Associate Director at Talbert House, Darcy Lichnerowitz, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Health Promotion and Education, Rebecca Vitterick. In just a moment, how the Reds are doing at the All-Star break. This is Cincinnati Edition.